Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation with Miranda Young about ghost biker explorations. Let's talk some about some of the locations that you've been at. In particular, I want to talk about ones that you were surprised by. Maybe something happened there you didn't see coming. And also, you know, with your research going into it, sometimes, you know, you think it's going to go one way. Mm-hmm. As we all know, best laid plans, have you gone into a place, a location with one thing in mind, and then come out of it with a whole different take on it?
Yeah, I've had several of those. And, one of them that's, I really like the simple episodes. And one of them, I believe it was season three, and it was the episode about the 1944 troop train accident. And so I do host haunted motorcycle rides, and we'll go through these different areas, you know, that may just seem like a regular road, but we always try to find different stories about that area. And so I was actually scouting out for a ride. And as I was riding on 25 West on this curvy mountain road that really didn't have much on it, I saw a little 8x8 sign that said 1944 troop train accident viewing spot. Well, there was really nowhere to view because, I mean, it was pretty much a cliff face beside me, and there were trees grown up. So when I got back to my base camp where I was, I started researching, and I found that this accident was in the top five troop train accidents of all time. And it took place on the Tennessee-Kentucky line in this area known as the Jellicoe Narrows. And so I went back, went about a half mile down the road, found a place to pull off, and literally hiked down the side of the mountain and got down to the water. And so basically, once you're down on the water, you've got the road up above you. On one side, you've got the water that's there, and then you've got the train tracks that run through there. And so the Jellicoe Narrows is this narrow area that's very rocky. And so what had happened there in 1944 was when this train derailed, they were carrying fresh recruits who hadn't even been to boot camp just yet. They were actually on their way to boot camp. So I thought, this is a fascinating story that needs to really be told more so than just from a little 8x8 sign. And so when I first investigated, I had to be kind of, I didn't know where I was going. So I went during the daytime. So it is a daytime investigation. I also had to be kind of creative because you did have road noise. You also had some water noise. So I had to use some different tools. And it really didn't yield a lot of evidence. And I didn't know, I was kind of going in hoping that, you know, we would have this. I had downloaded commercials for recruiting commercials. And some commercials from the 40s. And because there was so much pride from some of these guys, I mean, they were going to defend their country. Yeah. And so, I thought that might bring some activity. I also found all the names of all the folks who were the guys who were killed in the accident. And I read those off. I played some war music. And the one thing that was really interesting to me is that I couldn't get down to the actual derailment spot because the waters had flooded that week. And so as I'm sitting there, I do a dowsing rod session and I ask, you know, where the actual train wreck site occurred. And of course, the dowsing rods point downriver, and we didn't have any interference. We didn't have anything coming across the spirit boxes. And so when I ask about the derailment site, the one thing that I actually got was something came across the radio. It said waterfall. And so the very next week after the floodwaters had receded, I went back and I ended up hiking to the spot. And wouldn't you know, right there where the accident was. So the Boy Scouts had actually put up a monument there on the rock where the accident took place. It was about half mile from where I was. And right there was this neat little waterfall. So to me, I loved that episode. And I actually went in with several different things because I really wasn't sure what to expect. I wanted to show that not all investigations have to take place at night. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to show the different techniques. And really, like I said, I didn't really care if I got anything, but I felt like the actual little bit of activity that I did get was able to validate some of the stories. Not sure who I was speaking with and who was coming through, but that was definitely one that was kind of unexpected. Gosh, there's been so many cool places. And another one was probably one, it was probably Brushy Mountain State Prison. I did end up sleeping there. And I got some of the best EVPs that I had ever captured, intelligent and residual, while I was sleeping there. And I didn't know that was the first time I'd slept in a location. And so probably if I had heard some of this in the moment, I don't know if I would have slept as well as I did, because it was unexpected. But I've been really lucky most places that I've gone to that I've captured some type of activity. It may not be dramatic and it may not happen in the moment, but after I'm sitting there going through hours and hours and hours of footage and audio, when I capture that unexpected voice or thing on the camera, that just really kind of pushes me and drives me to continue going through that evidence and see, you know, what else is there? What else could I have missed?
Do you find when you go into a place like a prison or a jail, because you've done some jails as well, mm-hmm. as a woman on her own, you might have another woman with you. Mm-hmm. Is it a vulnerable feeling? Do you feel kind of maybe unwelcome, or they're fascinated by you because you shouldn't be a woman on her own inside of that prison? Have you ever picked up on something like that?
I have. And sometimes I wonder if that's why I get different activity when I'm sleeping. Take Brushy Mountain State Prison. You know, that was a male prison. And so I didn't get a whole lot of activity while I was actively investigating. And I often kind of wondered if it's because either they are a little surprised that mm-hmm. I'm either there or, and asking the questions, or if it is the fact that when you go into that sleep state and you're in that more vulnerable state and almost in like a almost like an astral projection type thing. I'm wondering if that's why sometimes I get different activity, but I have found that in certain locations, that your gender does tend to play a part in the type of activity that you're getting.
And in a prison too, you would think there would be spirits in there that might have been very abusive and done some, mm-hmm. you know, some things to women, which was why they were in there, bad people.
Yes.
And so when a woman comes in by herself, it almost seems like, aha, my chance. And
yeah, and
I think that would be kind of a intimidating environment for you.
It can be. It definitely can be. I know when I did the jail in Fentress County, it was a very similar situation to that. It had never been investigated but one time. And I went 2 weeks in a row. And the first week, it was like they just really didn't want to communicate. And I think part of that, and I got several disembodied voices, a couple of them, and they were all male. And what was crazy about it, they were just on my static cameras. When I was investigating a different part of the area, I had a man yell out, "Just leave," you know, real loud, "Just leave." And, you know, I think some of that, I think it was because of an uncomfortable situation. Now, because this location had, you know, you kind of have to treat some of these locations different when they've not been investigated before, or at least very often. So that's why I went back the second week, and I tried to create an environment to where I did different things like played cards and, you know, had different tools there that they might use in the jail to try to make it a familiar type situation. And so also the fact that I had been there before, I spent a lot of that first time just trying to talk to them and explain what I'm doing. So yeah, there have been certain situations, throughout my time doing this where, either I should not be in that place as a female, or, well, another example would be when I was out investigating in South Dakota at the Fairmont, which the Fairmont was a brothel. And so being a woman, I got a lot of, now this has not come out as an episode. I was actually out there speaking and leading a guided ghost hunt. I feel like I got some different activity. And as soon as I walked into that building, something, I got the weirdest feeling of like, I was really dizzy and I felt like something was pushing on my forehead and like pushing me back, not letting me come in. And I talked to one of the ladies that runs the location, and she said, that's really common for women, that there are some spirits in there. If you're a female, they don't want you in there. But then once you get in there, you get treated different because the women who were in this brothel were treated much different because it was one of the lower end brothels in the area.
And imagine their lives, you know, it just had to have been horrible to live like that.
Yeah. They still had the rings on the floor where they would be chained.
No.
Yes, they were still there. And one of the coolest things that happened when I was there was we were walking around and we were getting a lot of responses. And basically the women, either you could be sold to the building or you could willingly go there and work. And so they had a lot of suicides there where the chain basically just reached from the corner of the room there to the bathroom. And so you would have women, I think they had maybe 13 confirmed deaths where women had jumped out the window. And so either the chain was long enough where it would swing them back into the wall, or it would snap their leg and kill them. And so, you know, the thing that happened to me when I was there, we were walking around, we were leading this, and I was wearing a locket that had a picture of my dad in it, and it's a silver locket. And I kept feeling while I was standing there, something just tugging on my necklace. And I had three other ladies standing there with me. And as I felt this pulling, I kept talking about it, and we were running a spirit box while we were walking. And I said, wow, I said, something just keeps pulling on my necklace, like they're trying to either pull it off or trying to choke me with it. And right after I said that, one of the ladies said, are you pulling on Miranda's necklace? And soon as she said it, this very, very clear female's voice comes over and says, you're lucky. And it was like it gave me chills, but it was so clear, such a class A EVP. And, you know, I feel that was kind of one of those things that had we had maybe some men in the group, or, had I been a guy, I think the activity could have been very different.
Have you had a situation where you've done your research, there's a story about a certain town, kind of a lore legend type of story. And then you've gone to check it out. And it was like, oh, there's more truth to this than I ever imagined. Because I think sometimes you assume those stories is kind of the telephone game. They've gone around for so long that it's not, there's not a lot of truth to the story. It's, you know, loosely based on the truth. And then you get there and it's like, well, this is interesting. Plot twist or something.
Mm-hmm. I've had several of those happen. And to me, they've really been the ones that are the old stories, you know, that everyone's heard or that everyone's passed down. And one of them that comes to mind, it was from season one and episode two. And this was a story that was covered in the book 13 Tennessee Ghosts and Jeffrey. And it's interesting because friends that I've talked to in North Georgia and North Carolina have even heard this story. It takes place in Charleston, Tennessee. And the story is of a train wreck that takes place in the late 1860s due to a flood. And so Chattanooga and all of southeastern Tennessee is flooded over. And so they... the train is coming down. The engineer is not aware of this flood. And so the train ends up derailing. And there is, the story is that a lot of people perished and they used a lot of the homes in the area as makeshift hospitals. They even used the depot as a makeshift morgue. But there was a monk who was on this train that ended up perishing. And he had come from, Maryland area. And I think he was supposed to be on his way to New Orleans. Well, the doctor supposedly, he allegedly took the body that had, as it had perished there in the accident, took it to his home, dissolved the skin from the bones in a bathtub and used it in his doctor's office as a skeleton, because apparently at that time, if you didn't have a skeleton in your office as a doctor, you know, you weren't any type of doctor. And so this story had been going around for a long time. So I wanted to share the story of Charleston and a lot of the history that surrounds the area. So I ended up going to the train wreck site where we believe that that had happened, and had a pretty interesting spirit box session there. It said that if you go there to the tracks at night when it's raining, that you will either see a phantom train or you will see a man walking on the tracks that's believed to be the monk. And so myself, my camera guy, Josh, at the time, we had planned. We went there during a rainstorm and did the investigation. Had a pretty interesting little investigation. Well, through Josh, through his connections, he had some connections with someone who had actually purchased a tub from the doctor's estate sale. Now, was this the actual tub? I don't know, but it did date back to that time period. And it did come
from
the
estate
sale. How many
bathtubs would he have? So if it isn't the one, it's one of two.
Exactly. You know. And so this tub is sitting in the house, in a house that has been abandoned for about 12 years. It's just been used as storage. And the homeowner was gracious enough to let us go in and investigate. And it's interesting. This ended up actually turning into a full case study. But the tub, some of the responses that I was getting actually correlated to some of the things that we were getting there at the crash site. Now, I got the word chrism, and I believe, I don't know if it's two words or one, but I believe it's C-R-I-S-S-O-M, chrism. And as I was looking, one of the things that was interesting about this was that that was a popular last name in that area where some of the passengers were said to be coming from during that time frame in the 1860s. And so, again, this is a story that's been passed down for a long time. I do not know the name of the monk. We were getting some of the ways that we were getting responses inside this house like I said, they did correlate to the stuff we were getting at the accident site, but they were also things that would sort of, they reacted to our trigger items. I'll just say that, and like I said, it turned into a full case study. Now, there were things going on in this house. Some of the things we were able to tie back to the tub. Some of the things we were able to tie to things that had happened in this home. And that led to a couple other episodes that we filmed there because this house was very active. So it was kind of hard to distinguish whether some of the things in the beginning was related to why we were there or if it was something totally different and unrelated, but it ended up becoming a big piece of the puzzle. That's probably one of my favorites because it was so unexpected, but right. Then also we were able to tie a lot together.
Now you can watch, as we're talking, you can watch the web series on YouTube or the Facebook page, ghostbikerexplorations.com.
Yes.
Did I get that right? And then Miranda's going to come back because we've got an entirely different topic that we want to talk about. And that is you, I'll let you explain it because you have a jail that you run as a museum and you do investigations there. And I want to talk about it, the historic Scott County Jail.
Yes, in Huntsville, Tennessee.
So we're going to come back and do this again because I was like, well, we could talk about them both. And I'm like, that's a whole nother episode. That would be so fun to talk about that.
Yeah. You know, it's been really interesting to see the evolution of all of this, to go from investigating on the weekends with the team to creating Ghost Biker Explorations and it essentially becoming what, you know, what I do. It really evolved more than just a hobby. And so I did end up leaving the corporate world in 2020 and reaching out to a friend who I met through the paranormal, Dr. Christy Sumner, who is the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal. We became good friends. We ended up forming the company History, Highways, and Haunts. And I said, hey, you know, there's this old jail that's sitting in my hometown and they're not doing anything with it. And so would you like to form a company and see what we can do? So we've now been open for 2 years and we host paranormal investigations and have a true crime museum set up inside there.
And everybody has to Google it. It is the one of the creepiest looking jails I've ever seen. It's like one of those that you look at and you go, if you were to drive by it, you would go, I can feel the spirits from out here. Because you would just know it's haunted. It just looks like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sandstone castle in the middle of East Tennessee. And, you know, for me, it's right outside of our library. And when I used to go to check out all those books to learn about the paranormal when I was a kid, I can remember looking over at that jail when it was in operation and just sitting there in awe of the architecture of it and thinking to myself, what does it look like inside of there? And is that place haunted? It's got to be haunted.
And look, all these years later, full circle.
That's exactly right. And crazy. Who would have thought?
Right? So I can't wait for that episode. So let's do that in a couple weeks, maybe. If you've got some time, look at your schedule. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm very impressed by you and what you do. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I definitely hope everyone will go and check it out, binge watch the past 6 seasons, and get ready for season 7 that we're going to start working on very soon.
And that wraps up our conversation with Miranda Young about Ghost Biker Explorations. You can watch the series on her YouTube channel or visit her website at ghostbikerexplorations.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, you'll get the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, Become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.